Chapter 10. Nomanor forgot his itch as he filed into the Hall of Confluence behind his superior, High Prefect Yug Skell. The hall was magnificent. Broad at the four palpating doors by which high-ranking members of the four ruling castes entered, then narrowing as it approached the far end. The room was a trompe-l'oeil, designed so that all eyes were drawn toward an artificial vanishing point, at which point was the seat of the Supreme Overlord. The walls were chitin-marbled black and white. Pillars of white bone supported the roof, and coral spread pale lace over the arches of the ceiling. Though the planes of the room were flat, the Dovin basils that provided the room's artificial gravity were tweaked slightly so as to provide the sense of walking uphill as one approached the Supreme Overlord. It felt as if he sat at a summit, and all others toiled upward toward him. At the focus of all eyes was the largest Yuuzhan Vong that Nomanor had ever seen, a giant even among the most massive warriors. Shimra sat in silence on a blood-red throne of Yorick coral that thrust spines and spikes from its central mass, as if warding an enemy from the Overlord's presence. His ceremonial robes were somber, black and gray. The gray was leather, the carefully preserved flesh of Steng, who in the distant past had lost the Kremlevian War to Yogand, the first Supreme Overlord of the Yuuzhan Vong. Shimra's massive head was so covered with scars, slashes, tattoos, and the marks of branding that he could barely be said to have a face at all, just a torn collection of barely healed wounds. But fierce, discerning intelligence could be seen behind the glowing macaquet implants in his eye sockets, which shifted through the spectrum as he watched the dignitaries enter. Crouched at the feet of Shimra was a lanky figure dressed in rags that hung in shreds on his flabby skin, his lip curled back over his teeth to show one yellow fang. His skull was misshapen, with one lobe swollen. Shimra's familiar, Onimi. The dignitaries plodded uphill toward Shimra and took their places, each of the four castes equidistant from the throne. Shimra loomed over them, and for once this was not a trick of the gravity. The Supreme Overlord was enormous. All prostrated themselves, and then in mighty voice chanted their salutation. Aitana Shimra Kot Yuno, long life to Shimra, beloved of the gods. A deep rumble came from the throne. Nomanor could barely see Shimra's lips move as he spoke. Let the great council be seated. The leading members rose to their feet and took their seats, which had been adjusted so as to compensate for the room's peculiar gravity. Nomanor rose and then remained on his feet. He did not rate a chair in the Supreme Overlord's presence. Standing across the room, Nomanor saw the priest, Harar, with whom he had shared several serious misjudgments. Harar gave no sign of knowing him. Good, Nomanor thought. Let all that be forgotten. He shifted on his feet, propping himself against the gravity that made him lean to his right. The movement triggered the itching again, and Nomanor clenched his teeth against the blaze of sensation. The itching had spread across his belly and under one armpit, and it felt as if half his skin were aflame. His fingers twitched with the urge to scratch, and he forced them straight. The shamed one, Onimi, rose to his feet. "Great lords all," he began, "whose plans profound have put our feet on solid ground. I hope you will not think it crime if for this day I speak in rhyme." Onimi paused for an answer, mismatched eyes scanning the crowd, as if anyone would object. Shimra's status as Supreme Overlord was unquestioned, and the reflection of his power was that he had actually adopted a shamed one as his familiar, a grotesque, twisted being who had been rejected by the gods. Shimra permitted his familiar extraordinary liberties, and to all appearances enjoyed the creature's grotesque capers as well as the discomfort they caused among onlookers. After the pause, Onimi raised his arms and performed a lurching pirouette, spinning to display the rags he wore. "Permit me to recite an ode True raiment knew this latest mode. For like my lord, I glory in my garments made of foeman's skin. Surprise flashed through Numanor as he realized that Onimi's rags were the remnants of New Republic uniforms taken from those who had fallen at Coruscant. There were intakes of breath around the chamber as others realized this as well. Onimi capered on, shambling near High Priest Jakan, who hissed and drew back so that none of the whirling rags could contaminate him. Shamed ones had been rejected by the gods themselves, damned to all the contempt and hatred they surely deserved.
Enough.
The single word came from Shimra, and was sufficient for Onimi to fall silent, a glimmer of fear in his eyes.
Back to your place, creature, Shimra growled. Our meeting will be long enough without having to endure your capers.
The overlord's familiar cringed in apology, then dragged himself back to the throne and dropped like a sack of bones at his master's feet. Shimra's head turned left and right, viewing all the delegates in turn. Then he turned his massive body toward Savangla.
I should like to discuss the prosecution of the war. What do you have to say, War Master?
Savangla's hand formed a fist, which he brought down with a crash on the arm of his chair.
I have but one word to say, and that is victory.
His delegation growled in agreement.
The enemy capital is ours,
the War Master continued, and you have taken formal possession of it.
We followed the capture of Yuuzhan'tar with our victory at Borleas. Supreme Commander Naschoka's fleet does well in hut space. With the exception of the unfortunate Kamkarsh, our forces have been victorious everywhere.
Onimi, at the overlord's feet, gave a little giggle that echoed strangely in the room's cavernous spaces. The War Master bared his teeth. Shimra gave a rumble of warning to Onimi at his impudence, and then his gaze settled on Savangla.
Onimi may spawn wretched doggerel, he said. But he has a point. Your attempt to capture Jaina Solo at Hapes was a complete failure.
Having no choice but to acknowledge his defeat, Savangla bowed his head.
I confess it. And the casualties we took for the capture of Yuuzhan'tar were enormous. The first two waves were wiped out, and the third wave, though victorious, was decimated. After that, Borleas was a very expensive victory. More, in my judgment, than the planet was worth. Your own father died. Plus, Kamkarsha's defeat was expensive in both lives and materiel. I am not as lenient as my predecessor.
A fanatic gleam entered Savangla's eyes.
We would give these lives again and more, he said. Life is less than nothing. What is a warrior's life compared to the glory of the Yuuzhan'vong?
Shimra's answer was sharp. I do not dispute your warrior's glory, or their willingness to die. That is not what is at issue.
I beg the Supreme Overlord's pardon, Savangla said. I did not understand. Do not assume that I am a fool.
Shimra barked. He pointed at Savangla.
You have won your victories by sending your troops over a rampart of our own dead. How do you intend to replace these casualties?
Numanor gloated at the sight of Shimra, taking the War Master to task for his failings. He and Savangla had butted heads often enough, and it did his heart good to see the warrior taken down a few steps in front of his rivals.
My lord, the War Master was at a loss. I have fulfilled all our primary objectives. I have given you the capital. We may grow more warships. But warriors must be bred, Shimra said. It will take a generation or more before our formations stand again at full strength, and we now have many worlds to defend. I will give you more victories, Savangla cried. The infidels are routed. If I follow up our victories, they will break.
The War Master was interrupted by yet another giggle from Onimi.
The War Master is not listening. He needs a new pair of ears,
or perhaps instead the organ that lies between them. A hiss of fury escaped his throat as Savonla glowered at Onimi.
Silence!
Again the word came from Shimra. Though the Overlord's tone was soft, the room's admirable acoustics made the words sing in the air. A hush followed, though Savonla seemed visibly to be choking on his words, as he again bowed before his superior. The Supreme Overlord spoke on.
You ask to follow the enemy. I have read our strength reports. We do not have sufficient forces both to maintain the offensive and to hold what we have already taken.
My lord,
Savonla kept his head bowed, with all respect, we pursue a broken foe. We may expect nothing but a glorious slaughter that adds great glory to your name. Shimra's voice was icy. The enemy that wiped out Kam Karsh was hardly broken. And may I remind the War Master that Kam Karsh's fleet was our sole strategic reserve. From this point, moving any warrior to strengthen one force will weaken another. Savonla had no answer. His eyes stayed fixed on the ground.
Our forces will break off offensive operations for the present, Shimra said. We may resume the offensive once we conclude a reorganization that brings more warriors into the field.
As the Supreme One wishes.
Savonla's voice was a barely audible hiss.
I wish it.
Shimra's glowing gaze rose from the War Master and swept over the room.
Many of our warriors are tied down in garrison and pacification duties, far from the front. I wish to liberate them for combat against the infidels.
His eyes sought out the delegation of Shapers, who had until this point remained silent.
I require you to create more warriors, he said.
Chagong Hul, Master of Domain Hul, a Shaper clan, responded quickly.
The Supreme Overlord refers to Surge Coral Implants?
Yes. Captives will be given implants enabling them to receive the commands of a Yamask. They will then be placed under the command of warriors.
Shimra turned again to Savonla.
Thus will you have larger forces to bring against the infidels.
I am grateful, God Chosen. Numanor couldn't help but observe that gratitude did not seem foremost in the War Master's mind.
If the warriors are not wasted,
Shimra said pointedly,
these measures should serve to correct the problem for the short term. In order to make up our losses in the long term, I command the following. All warriors will now be ordered to breed at the age of 16, if they have not already. If no mate chooses a given warrior, his or her commander will award a suitable mate from the warriors available. Afterward, awards and incentives will be devised to reward those who produce children.
Savonla bowed again.
It shall be as your wish, Supreme One.
Nothing shall be as I wish if we continue to lose battles,
Shimra reminded.
The enemy have developed new tactics that enable them to gain victories. I command a full report.
Savonla at last raised his head. The infidels have discovered a way to use a machine to override the signal sent to our units by the Yamasks. Our units are thus forced to operate on their own without strategic guidance.
And the remedy?
Shimra's question was prompt. The War Master hesitated.
We have not developed one as yet, Supreme One.
We have discussed the problem. He hesitated again.
The fact is, Supreme One, that this development is unprecedented in our history, and
you are baffled,
Shimra said. Again the War Master bowed.
Numanor felt a surge of gloating pleasure. I confess it, Savonla said. My life in payment.
Shimra turned again to the Shapers.
Has the Shaper cast any suggestions?
This time Chagong Hul's answer was not as swift as before.
We could attempt to create Yamasks that could function despite these evil machines' influence. But it would be more useful if we had a better understanding of the technical dimensions of the problem. Have any of these...
He hesitated even to speak the foul word. These machines been captured?
No, Savangla said. We do not capture machines, we destroy them.
And they have another type of new machine, do they not?
The Supreme Overlord asked. One that causes our vessels to fire on one another?
It is the cause of much misfortune, Savangla said.
The infidels have developed machines that adhere to our ships, like gruchons to a foe, and broadcast a signal identifying them as an enemy. Our own loyal ships, perceiving an enemy, then open fire.
His expression grew wooden.
The enemy insults us by placing on these machines the device of Yun-Harla, the trickster.
They insult not us, but the gods, shouted the high priest Jakan. Blasphemers, infidels, let us capture those responsible, and their agony shall be undying.
The Supreme Overlord gestured toward the priest.
Not now, Lord Priest.
Jakan fell silent. Shimmer leaned toward Savangla.
These deceptive devices are able to penetrate our ship's defenses?
No more than any other missile. But the infidels have also used treachery and surprise. They have captured one of our frigates. This vessel maintains a pretense of being friendly until such time as it launches missiles against us that turn our vessels against each other. The captured frigate then escapes in the confusion.
Shimmer was silent for a long moment. Then he said, You have been fooled how many times by this trickery?
Once, Supreme One. At Hapes, the first time the tactic was used. And Kamkarsh was tricked fatally at Obroa Sky, but he was encountering the tactic for the first time.
The solution seems elementary. You will develop recognition signals for friendly frigates. If any frigate fails to make the correct signal, all elements in the fleet should be instructed to regard it as an enemy.
I have already begun to implement this reform, the War Master said.
Let it be your greatest priority,
Shimra said.
We must restore the superiority of our forces.
It shall be done, Supreme One.
Shimra turned to Yug-Skel. Let the High Prefect inform us of the disposition, strength, and intentions of the infidels.
Yug-Skel bowed to the Supreme Overlord and presented a digest of the latest information procured from sources within the New Republic. Unfortunately, the digest was not as complete as once it would have been. Several of the most useful Yuuzhan Vong agents among the enemy had been killed or neutralized. The late Senator Vicky Shesh was particularly missed. The enemy government, Yug-Skel reported, had moved to Mon Calamari in the Outer Rim, though it was not clear whether it would remain there. The government had not as yet chosen a new head, though a human named Fjor Rodan was a possible candidate. There was also a Quarren named Puo, who had declared himself chief of state shortly after Coruscant, but it appeared that fewer and fewer of the New Republic were willing to follow his orders. The New Republic military appeared to be in a state of disarray since the fall of their capital. They had undertaken no coordinated operations since Borlias, and showed no sign of doing so. Delegates from several worlds had come to the Yuuzhan Vong offering surrender or neutrality. It was difficult in the current conditions to determine whether or not their credentials were genuine, so it wasn't often clear whether they had been sent officially or not. Leaders of the Peace Brigade, infidels who were collaborating with the Yuuzhan Vong, had established their capital on Elysia. They had the beginnings of their own fleet, though their equipment was drawn from a variety of sources and was hardly uniform. Yuuzhan Vong cadres were doing their best to train them. While Yug-Skel made his report, Numanor tried his best to remain rigidly calm. The itch had turned his skin to fire. Desperately he willed himself to be still. He noticed, as he stood in silence behind his chief, that Yug-Skel's hand was surreptitiously scratching his leg under cover of his desk. So Yug-Skel had the itch as well,
and the stress of his report had made him surrender to the weakness of scratching. Numanor wished he dared surrender to such a weakness. After Yugskel's report, there was a moment of silence before Shimmer responded.
"This Fjordrodan," he said, "this Calumus, is it known whether they will favor submission or war?"
"Supreme One, I will defer in this matter to my junior colleague Numanor," Yugskel said. "He is a specialist on the subject of the infidels, having lived among them for many years."
Shimmer's baleful rainbow gaze lifted to Numanor, and again Numanor felt the chill of fear. He could feel Shimmer's presence, the god's given power he possessed, and it sat on Numanor's heart like a great weight. At least he forgot all about his itch.
"Supreme One," he began, and was thankful he hadn't stammered. "According to the analysis provided by our guest Vicky Shesh, Fjordrodan was a supporter of Borskfelja, though he occasionally showed signs of independence. His only consistent position was on the matter of the Jedi, whom he always opposed. As far as we know, he hasn't expressed an opinion on the matter of peace or war. Neither has Calumus, who has, however, consistently supported the Jedi."
Numanor wished, as the word left his lips, that he hadn't mentioned the Jedi, which might remind the Supreme One of too many mistakes that Numanor had committed in the field. But Shimra, to the intendant's relief, pursued a different tack.
"This failure punished Rodan and Omus for their independence?"
"Not as far as I know, Supreme One."
"Failure was a weak creature," Shimra mused. "He scarcely deserved the honorable death we gave him."
"Supreme One," Numanor said, "the citizens of the New Republic lack a proper understanding of hierarchies and the duties due to one's superior. They believe that a certain amount of independence of mind is permissible. Borskfelja's attitude was not unusual among their leaders."
Shimra absorbed this, then nodded. "One of our great missions, then, shall be to teach these creatures the proper meaning of submission."
Numanor bowed. "Undoubtedly, Supreme One."
"I wish this Calumus killed. Have your agents carry out an assassination."
Numanor hesitated.
"Few of my agents are in place on Mon Calamari," he said.
Shimmer's eyes glittered dangerously. Numanor crossed his arms obediently.
"It shall be as you desire, Supreme One."
The Supreme Overlord's next question was so soft-spoken that it caught Numanor by surprise.
"We shall teach the New Republic the glory of the gods. And what shall we teach the Jedi? More importantly, what have they taught us?"
At the mention of the Jedi, fear paralyzed Numanor's tongue. But after a brief internal struggle, he managed to wrench a satisfactory answer from his half-numbed mind.
"We shall teach them how to increase the glory of the Yuuzhan Vong through their extermination. And what they have taught us is that their treachery is boundless and must be answered with death and blood."
He heard a growl of agreement from the warriors and also from members of the intendant delegation. Shimra, however, was silent. Numanor felt the overlord's eyes on him, and felt again the presence of Shimra's mind pressing on his own. It was as if his very thoughts had become transparent, completely exposed to the overlord's inquiring mind. Again fear shimmered up Numanor's spine.
"And whose fault?"
Shimra asked in a voice all the more ominous for its quiet tone.
"Was the fiasco in the Well of the World brain?"
Numanor fought his way to the surface through a current of blind panic.
"My lord," he said, "though I am not blameless, I beg you to remember that I operated under the authority of War Master Savong La."
The War Master stood tall, not deigning to respond.
Numanor battled terror as he realized the others were perfectly willing to sacrifice him.
"We all underestimated the treachery of the Jedi, Supreme One," he said.
We were misled by the creature Verger. I no more or less than others.
Shimra fixed Nomanor again with his baleful look. Thousands witnessed this disaster, he said. One of the Jedi, they were told, had been converted through the embrace of pain to the true path, and would willingly sacrifice one of his peers in the well and offer his death to the gods. And instead, what do they see? The great doors slammed in their faces as our tame Jedi escaped, while the supposed sacrificial victim held off an army with a special Jedi weapon that was supposed to have been taken from him. The world brain was endangered, Jigong Hul cried. The Jedi could have destroyed our last Duryam, just as he destroyed all the others.
This catastrophe has led to heresy, spoke the priest, Jakan. Thousands were led to doubt the wisdom of their superiors and the reality of the gods.
Shimra's eyes once again settled on Numanur. Heresy. Doubt. Danger to the Duryam on which all our plans for our new homeworld depend. Proof of the heroism of the Jedi fighting in our own capital before the eyes of thousands. And executor, he will have us believe that this was entirely the workings of one little avian, this Verger. Numanor's vision began to darken. He felt as if his soul were being squeezed by a ruthless velvet hand. He gasped in air and tried to speak in his defense.
Supreme One, he managed, none of us trusted her completely. All her meetings with the captive Jedi were monitored. Nothing seditious passed between them. Her explanations for her behavior were plausible. She proved her loyalty more than once. She led Jacen Solo into captivity on 3 separate occasions. When the Jedi was tortured, his physical responses were monitored, and truly indicated that he was learning the embrace of pain. He was accepting the pain as if he were Yuuzhan Vong. When he announced his willingness to proclaim the true doctrine and sacrifice the other Jedi whom he himself had captured, no one doubted him.
And the importance of the twin sacrifice? Shimra inquired. The idea that this Jacen Solo should not be killed immediately, but held until he could be sacrificed along with his sister, whose notion was that?
Verger's, Numanor said.
He felt the presence of the Supreme Overlord begin to squeeze his mind again, blotting out his thoughts. He could see only Shimra's ruthless, glowing eyes. It is like the embrace of pain, he thought, mental torture at the hands of a Yamask. Through the horrible pressure he held to one word. Verger, he cried. Verger! It was all Verger!
Supreme One, another voice said. Through the blur of oppression and terror, Numanor recognized the priest Harar. Another betrayer, he thought, another one come to crush me with some burden of blame.
I was present, Supreme One, Harar said. The idea of the twin sacrifice was partly my own, partly Kali La's, partly Verger's. I confess that I was duped. The truth is that Verger fooled us, because none of her actions seemed capable of a treacherous interpretation. Why did she lead Jacen Solo into captivity not once, but thrice? She had numerous opportunities to help him escape, but did not do so. Why did she participate in his torture? Why did she manipulate him, or seem to manipulate him, on our behalf?
I have concluded, Harar finished, that if Verger is not loyal to us, neither is she loyal to the infidels.
Numanor sobbed for breath as the mental pressure was released. Through his dimmed eye, he could make out Harar standing in the delegation of High Priest Jakan. The High Priest did not seem pleased to hear his subordinate's confession. Thus far, the College of Priests had escaped any blame for the catastrophe, and now Harar was likely to bring unwelcome attention to his caste. Numanor's blood sang with gratitude for Harar. The priest had saved him. The War Master, on the other hand, looked at Numanor as if he were on the verge of throttling him.
While Nomanor struggled to recover his presence of mind, Shimra interrogated Harar and the Warmaster. In the end, the Supreme Overlord leaned back on his throne, disappearing into its spiky interior.
"Interesting," he said. "For 50 years, this Fajer has lived among us, and none of us knew her true nature. For 50 years, she studied us, and learned our ways, and was able to plan her treachery."
He leaned forward and turned to Jakan.
"Priest," he said, "is this creature not the true incarnation of Yun-Harla, the trickster?"
Outrage quivered in the priest's jowls, but when he spoke his voice was firm.
"Never," he said. "Say rather that Verger is the embodiment of evil."
"Is she a Jedi?" someone queried.
"She can't be," Harar said. "The Jedi derive their abilities from something called the Force, and their use of it can be detected by a Yamask. If Verger were Jedi, she would have been unmasked."
Shimra's deep voice was reflective.
"Jedi or not, I wonder about her. Isn't such a deception, over such a long period, a kind of masterpiece?"
He looked down at his creature, Onimi.
"Is she not worthy of admiration, to deceive so many for so long?"
he asked, and gave Onimi a kick. Onimi, startled, looked up and began to warble. "Out of the world well, and into thin air, that devious trickster, the traitor Verger." And then, with a fawning glance at his master, Onimi added, slyly, "But some little pets are more suitably loyal. I'll still be your friend and share your throne royal." Shimra burst into laughter at this and shoved Onimi with his foot, pushing him another step lower.
"You may share my throne from there, Onimi," he said.
Onimi shaded his eyes with a hand and peered out at the assembled delegations. "I still have a better view of things than any of these, Supreme One," he noted, thankfully forgetting to speak in rhyme.
"That wouldn't be hard," Shimra said almost as an aside.
Uneasy laughter rolled around the great chamber. Nomanor, still dizzied from his interrogation, sensed the anxiety and fear that lay beneath the laughter. Would the Supreme Overlord choose another one to humiliate? Shimra faced his audience.
"The lesson of all this is simple," he said. "Let all follow my example, and permit no pet to inhabit a position of trust."
The delegates chorused agreement. Nomanor couldn't help but think, however, that Onimi was trusted at least to the extent of being permitted to attend meetings where important matters were discussed. If Onimi were a spy, he could give his secret masters much useful information. But if Onimi were a spy, surely Shimra, through his powerful presence that saw into souls, would discover the fact. But Verger, too, should have been discovered, should she not.
"High Priest," Shimra said, turning his head toward Jakan. "My apologies for delaying this vital discussion until now. I wished us all to give it our full attention. Please bring to everyone's attention this matter of heresy."
The better to make his presentation, Jakan rose to his feet, his formal robes brushing the floor. His daughter, the priestess Aelan, had adopted the treacherous Verger as a pet, and then died on a mission to assassinate the Jedi. The loss of his daughter had hardened Jakan in his religious orthodoxy, and hardened him in his determination to implement the will of the gods.
"I, too, bring word of infiltration," he said.
He gave a ponderous pause, his head turning left to right to view each delegation in turn. As the priest's eyes crossed with his, Nomanor felt a thrill of fear. Was the High Priest about to accuse someone here?
"Not by dangerous spies," Jakan went on at last, "but by dangerous ideas. Priests from as far away as Dubrillion have reported that they have discovered unauthorized, clandestine meetings among the lower orders, meetings that claim to be religious ceremonies.
Meetings in private quarters or empty countryside. Meetings where our own true way is denied, and where treasonous, heretical concepts are spread to the people.
Again the priest paused solemnly, as if to emphasize the gravity of his words. Shimra spoke into the silence.
Heresy is nothing new. Why is this of such great import? What sort of people take part in these ceremonies?
Shamed ones,
Jacan said in a fierce whisper, as if the words themselves were obscene.
Shamed ones and workers, precisely those castes needing the greatest guidance in matters of belief. Sometimes,
again his voice dropped into a dramatic whisper,
workers and shamed ones are found at the heretical ceremonies together.
Nomanor's single eye was drawn irresistibly to the shamed one, Onimi. Condemned by the gods through the failure of his implants. For once Onimi seemed inclined to remain silent, though his lanky body half reclined in a pose of insolence. His upper lip was again curled to reveal one long yellow tooth.
"And the nature of these heretical ceremonies," Shimmer prodded. "They venerate the Jedi,"
Jacan said, and this time there was a murmur of outrage and surprise from the crowd.
"The power of the Jedi has brought into question that the gods favor the Yuuzhan Vong. They believe that Yun Harla and Yun Yamka are aligned with the twins Jaina and Jason Solo, and some of the heretics here on Yuuzhan'tar have, in the last weeks, begun to revere a being they call the Ganner. Ganner, of course, was the name of the Jedi who gave his life at the Battle of the Worldwell."
Shimra fingered his chin.
"Where do the lower orders acquire these heresies?
The contamination was probably begun by slaves from the New Republic who labor alongside the workers and shamed ones,"
Jacan explained.
"Slaves who admired the Jedi and their philosophy."
Jacan clenched his fist and shook it.
"At the moment, the heretics are not organized. They have no real leaders, and their doctrine is a jumble of contradictory ideas. Stop them now. Root them out, before they grow into a force that weakens us from within."
Again the priest offered a dramatic moment of silence, and then he turned and bowed toward Shimra.
"Such is my report, Supreme One."
Nuanor heard a sigh from his own superior, Yuxkel, but he was unable to work out what the sigh meant. The itching was a tormenting blast that seared Nomanor's flesh.
"Have you any specific recommendations concerning this crisis?"
the Supreme Overlord inquired.
"Kill the heretics is final, but lacks detail."
Jacan bowed again.
"Supreme One, my recommendations would demand absolute segregation of the slaves from our own people, so as to prevent the spread of inappropriate ideas. Public sacrifice of the heretics, rewards for those who renounce their false paths, and turn in their fellows."
Yuxkel sighed again, more loudly this time, more wearily.
"Supreme One," he said. "Well, I am certainly no friend to heresy. I must beg for less drastic methods. We are engaged in a war that may continue for klekits, or even longer. The combined labors of workers and shamed ones and slaves are necessary to advance our objectives. We have settlements to grow, food crops to raise in half-wrecked ecosystems, ships and weapons and other vital items to ripen and harvest, and Yuuzhan'tar itself to transform from a machine-poisoned artificial landscape into our perfect ancestral paradise."
Jacan bowed toward Yuxkel.
"Our paradise can scarcely be perfect if it contains heresy." "I concede the High Priest's point," Yuxkel said, "but an inquiry into all our workers would be disruptive. Segregation of the workers from the slaves is impossible at this stage. They are all engaged in vital work. Going amid them with bribes aimed at getting them to turn on one another
Imagine the disruption. Imagine the situation if the workers start accusing overseers in the hope of seeing them brought down. Imagine how many false accusations we should have to weed out from the true.
That would be the task of the priests, Jacan said. Your own people need not concern themselves.
But if the workers should accuse warriors, or shapers, or even loyal priests?
Numenor realized that Yug-Skel was pointing out to the shapers and warriors that Jakan's plan put them at risk, as well as the workers, whom no one cared about. Yug-Skel spoke on. Besides, who cares what the shamed ones think? The gods hate them anyway. And whose fault is it that the workers lapse into heresy? Haven't the priests already failed in their duty?
Jakan, bloated with injured dignity, was about to make a furious rebuttal when Shimra held up a hand for silence. All eyes respectfully turned to him, all except that of Numenor, who was blind to everything but a sudden blaze of his own itching torment. The itch was spreading. Now his back was on fire, where he couldn't scratch even if he wanted to.
"The gods have placed me upon this throne as their instrument," Shimra said, "and I agree with the High Priest that heresy may not be tolerated."
A satisfied look inflated Jakan's face, a satisfaction that died away at the Overlord's next words.
"But the High Prefect has a worthy point. When we are at war, it is foolish to disorder one's own forces. I don't want disruption among the workers at such a time, particularly since the workers are uneducated and may have adopted these beliefs without knowing their dangerous nature. Therefore," he turned to the High Priest, "Priest Jakan, I direct that the priests inform the people of the danger of this heresy. Tell them from me, from their supreme overlord, that the Jedi are not emanations of the gods. Tell them that such beliefs are unsound and forbidden. Those workers who are properly obedient to their superiors will then know to avoid any such contamination in the future. And," the priest bowed, "if they persist in their error, you may kill any heretics you come across as publicly as you like."
Shimra said, "But I wish no large-scale investigation of the masses of workers, no rewards for accusations. When we win the war," he nodded at Jakan, "then we may have a more thorough inquiry. But for the present, I want the Yuuzhan Vong focused on defeating our enemies, not interrogating each other." Jakan's face had fallen, but he bowed and acceded with grace.
"It shall be as you wish, Supreme One." "You may return to your seat, High Priest Jakan."
With great dignity, the priest returned to his desk. Behind him, Onimi sneered and scratched himself again. Fury raged in Numenor as he watched the misshapen figure scratch. How he would love to have those fingers beneath his boot! An agreeable expression crossed Shimra's face.
"The Shamed One reminds me," he said, "that I should ask the Shapers how their work progresses. How goes the world-shaping of Yuuzhan'tar?"
"Supreme One," Chaganghul said, "it goes well."
"This news is pleasing," Shimra said. "May we inquire of the Master whether there have been any problems?"
A look of caution crossed the Master Shaper's face. He spoke quickly. "Some difficulties are inevitable, Supreme One. We are dealing with an alien environment that we have largely destroyed, and some of the native life forms, microscopic ones mostly, are proving persistent. Perhaps," he admitted, "some of you have experienced some minor discomforts as the result of a fungal infection. We are attempting to,
"And the nature of this minor discomfort?" the Supreme Overlord asked sweetly.
Chaganghul hesitated. "Itching, Supreme One. Persistent itching."
Numanor's nerves flamed at the very mention of the word itch. Anger began to simmer in his blood. Chaganghul gave what was probably intended to be a confident growl. "A mere itch, Supreme One. Nothing that any member of the higher castes cannot overcome with the discipline demonstrated in the course of earning rank and honor."
"And you are, of course, a disciplined member of the highest caste," Shimra said.
Chaganghul rose to his feet, lordly in his ceremonial robes.
"I have earned that distinction, Supreme One."
Shimra jumped to his feet, both fists smashing the arms of his throne, and roared at the top of his lungs,
"Then why have I watched your surreptitious scratching through this whole meeting?"
Chaganghul froze. In the sudden ominous silence, Onimi jumped to his feet, rags of uniform swirling around him, and scratched himself with abandon. Then he sat down with a broad grin on his face. The Supreme Overlord pointed one long clawed implanted finger at the Master Shaper.
"The world-shaping of our new homeworld is being botched. Do you think I don't know that this plague has spread among our entire population here? Even I was infected within hours of landing on Yuuzhan'tar."
Anger erupted in Numanor's mind. This wasn't just about his own personal torture by this demonic itch. What was this whole war about, if not to recreate the perfection of the long-lost homeworld? What a catastrophe it would be if the world-shaping failed.
"Supreme One," Chaganghul said, "this complete reconstruction of an entire ecosystem is a complex matter. And though perfect success is within reach, it may take longer than our earlier estimates."
Shimmer gave a scornful laugh. "It's not simply the fungus, though, is it, Master Shaper? Do you think I haven't heard of the Grashals intended for worker barracks that melted down into a mass of undifferentiated protein? Or the crop of Villips that grew imprinted on some local animal and could only transmit the beast's screech of a mating call? The Blorass jelly that attempted to devour the Shapers who tended it?
Supreme One, I—"
Chaganghul attempted again to protest, then sagged in defeat.
"I confess the fault," he said. "Death!"
someone roared in Numanor's ear. The Supreme Overlord himself growled his rage.
"The world-shaping shall be placed in more competent hands than yours," he said, and then he turned to the group of warriors behind Savangla. "Commander, subalterns, take this impostor of a Master Shaper and carry him from this chamber. Execute him as soon as you get him out of our sight. Make him pay for his incompetence."